everybody. My name is Natalie Chung and a big welcome to Yellow Bee Pod. This podcast is all about highlighting the stories from East and Southeast Asian diaspora, Asian people who don't necessarily live in their homeland. I'm British-born Chinese and I felt like Asian voices, particularly from East and Southeast Asia, weren't represented well enough in the UK media. So I started this podcast to highlight some of the incredible people from East and Southeast Asian descent so you can hear their stories. And this is episode 9. If you're new, then welcome. Don't forget to go back and check out the other episodes that you may be interested in. And if you're not new, thank you for listening again. I really, really appreciate it. Before I launched this podcast, I heard that a lot of podcasters give up or end their podcasting journey by the 7th episode. And I just thought back over the last week about that. I'm still here after the 7th episode, which is good, and I'm not planning on stopping anytime soon, so come along for the journey. Don't forget to subscribe. Open up the app that you're listening to right now, click on subscribe or follow so you don't miss a future episode. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts and you've been enjoying Yellow Bee Pod, I would love it if you left a nice 5-star review. That would really mean a lot, and I heard it helps other people discover this podcast. So other people like you and me who are looking for content like this will find it easier to find this podcast if you leave a review. If you could take 2 minutes to do that, that would be amazing. If you are listening to this podcast and I recently connected with you on Instagram or WhatsApp or another social media, then hello! It's really great to be welcomed into some sort of Asian creative spaces and group chats, and I definitely don't describe myself as a creative, but it's so amazing to meet other people and hear all the amazing work that they're doing in a really sort of mutually encouraging, supportive space. Including a group chat that I started on WhatsApp that now has like 70 something people in it, which is mad, ridiculous, and I love it. I guess I am a creative now because I'm creating something, I'm creating this podcast, but yeah, I'm definitely still new to this world. Today we're focusing on the topic of colorism. So as with previous weeks, we're continuing the conversation about racism following the death of George Floyd. There has been phenomenal, actually, Black Lives Matter movements in countries around the world. This is definitely a conversation that needs to happen. And if I didn't say it clearly enough in our previous episodes, East and Southeast Asians, yes, we can face and we do face discrimination and racism, but we can also be guilty of racism and anti-blackness. And that is definitely connected to colorism. I've seen a lot of conversations over the last 2 weeks about colorism, particularly pertaining to South Asian countries like Indian, Sri Lankan communities, etc. But it definitely happens in East and Southeast Asia too. So in East and Southeast Asia, there are people who would describe themselves as brown. There are people with darker skin tones than I have. And it's important to note that because they often get erased because we don't see them in media. Also, there are Asian people who are also black, who also get part of their identity, part of their heritage erased in media. Like, I see a lot of very pale Asian celebrities whenever I tune into media that has actually come from the continent of Asia. So if you're watching like a Korean TV show or a Chinese drama or a Japanese, I don't know, Filipino, anything, everything. Yeah, there's a lot of pale celebrities, light-skinned celebrities that I see, and there's also a lot of celebrities who are part Caucasian, so they're actually half white or something. And I've never actually lived in Asia, so everything that I have seen is sort of from an external perspective, so I don't want to speak too much on this, but I would love to know your opinions on why this is. It definitely seems like celebrities that we follow, I mean, in every country, they follow an insane beauty standard that is sometimes unattainable, sometimes not natural, and sometimes it just really doesn't represent the population of the country that they're in. And that's the same in Asia. I don't know whether it's really about wanting to be white or following Eurocentric beauty standards, but colorism definitely exists where people want to be light-skinned. So growing up, I think a lot of people have this kind of story of looking at the crayons, looking at like the colouring pencils where they all have weird different names. And then the crayon that is supposed to be nude or skin colour is like a really, really fair skin tone. And I never sort of compared that to mine and thought that I wasn't enough because I'm light skinned myself. Overall, growing up, I wasn't super affected by it. Having said that, I was still encouraged to stay out of the sun, to stay light, to stay paler. And I guess I tan fairly easily. I mean, I do burn as well. If I'm out in the sun too long, I definitely burn. But I do tan quicker than quote unquote Caucasian people who might have the same skin tone as me sort of in the winter time. In terms of beauty standards, I've also had people tell me, oh, you look Western, you look pale, and they almost mean it as a compliment, like a casual compliment. And I've had people, actually, like people who are Asian and non-Asian, tell me that I look mixed race, like I look half white, more so in the past now. And they say this as if it's a compliment, like I'm 100% Chinese people. And I don't know whether it's just about having fair skin that is kind of Eurocentric, but also like having a taller nose that's maybe thinner, like a slimmer nose that's less flat. And people also get surgery for their nose, don't they? Maybe having blonde hair comes into Eurocentric beauty standards, and sort of having like the fold, the crease in your eyelids. Oh god, I really can't get into eyelids today. That's a whole other topic. But eyelids is a big thing in sort of East and Southeast Asian beauty standards. And if you are not from those communities, sometimes it can be quite difficult to understand sort of why that is. And I don't really know why either. But that beauty standard exists. And also, I just want to say, I don't look mixed race. So these people who are commenting, they're just blind. Or maybe they're just lying because they're trying to compliment me. But yeah, I'm 100% Chinese people. Make a note. And it's all relative as well. So most of the times when East and Southeast Asian people are talking about having darker skin, they don't mean as dark as someone who is black or has African heritage, for example. But any sort of tan or natural pigment can be considered to be darker skin tone. Thanks to Lana Lay, who got in touch to say, when I'm in Malaysia, people say I look very fair. But when I'm in the UK, some of my relatives say I have honey-coloured skin. Honey-coloured, I can't say I've heard of that one before. But yeah, I guess it's all relative and people can be seen as fair or dark, even if they have the same skin tone, depending on who is commenting or from the other person's perspective. I really don't know where it comes from. I think assuming that it's just because Asian people want to look like white people is a bit limiting, because colourism in Asia, it predates European colonization. But some info here about Indonesia. Since pre-colonial times, colorism has existed as a form of segregation within Asian countries. Light skin was considered high class because it means you did not work manual labor. Because Asian skin tends to tan easily, this is an easy way to tell who is upper and lower class. Yes, Asian skin can definitely tan easily, that's definitely me. And I have heard this before, that darker skin was supposed to signify that you were more likely to spend time outside working rather than sitting inside, working inside or not working at all. But I never really knew if that was like a true historical fact or whether it was just like one of those urban myths that makes sense, so it just keeps going round and round and getting spread. Thanks to someone who commented and shared their experience of this on Instagram. Oh, if you want to join in the conversation, yeah, definitely make sure you're following us on Instagram at yellowbeepod or Twitter, or you can drop me an email at yellowbeepod@gmail.com. Yeah, you can come and join in the conversation before, during, after listening to the episode. So this person is British-born Chinese, and they said, my mum is always so desperate not to get a tan to sustain the, quote, rich Asian look. Haven't heard of that one before either, rich Asian, but I guess that is related to class. She continues and says, my mum is from a small village in South China. Her whole family worked on the farm collecting rice and were always exposed to the sun, which made them darker, whereas the more privileged Chinese people didn't need to spend as much time outdoors and kept their lighter complexion. It's just something that's embedded in her. So her experience backs up what I've always thought. It is down to, yeah, if you have darker skin, you're more likely to be associated with manual labour. But I still don't 100% know if it's true in historical context. If anyone does know, please share. And it's so different to here in the UK, where I think like having a tan sort of signifies that you spend loads of time on holiday, travelling abroad, sunning on the beach. And that's more linked to having more money or a privileged background. So there definitely is a desire to have fairer skin within Asian countries and Asian communities around the world and here in the UK. You could say that colorism is not the same as anti-blackness. I recognize, yeah, they are different. But if we being Asian communities, if we see ourselves as better, if we're paler, that means we see ourselves as worse if we're darker. And that means we see that in other people as well. So do we genuinely think, like, I need to actually consider this for myself? Do I think that someone is less attractive or less powerful or less respected if they have darker skin? I don't think so, but maybe there is something there based around sort of what I perceive as a beauty standard based off the media that I consume. In terms of amplifying black voices, I would recommend that everyone listening to this check out Asia Jackson. She has both Filipino and black heritage, and she talks about colorism a lot. I follow her on Twitter. Her name is Asia Jackson. And colorism is not just exclusive to East and Southeast Asians. As I said, it also happens in South Asia. You can also buy skin whitening creams in Africa and other parts of the world, probably, but I wouldn't know. So maybe that's that kind of messed up if you think about it. Is there any continent that doesn't sell skin whitening creams or skin bleaching pills or, I don't know, there's probably all these different products. And it is like a multi-million pound market. So the beauty industry, we know, is huge. And the skin whitening industry is part of that, even if we don't really see it that much in the UK, at least not in high street stores, but maybe in sort of imported brands and products. And it's all based around unrealistic beauty ideals. I mean, yeah, maybe you could stay pale and maybe it is better for your skin. It's definitely better for your skin not to get burned. And I'm learning that as I get older, which is a sign that I'm an adult because I'm starting to agree with my mum. But have you ever used skin whitening creams? I definitely have, not even intentionally, because sometimes I just use an Asian cream and I don't even know that it has a skin whitening function, but it's just sort of marketed as a different word. It's not necessarily called skin whitening. And it's considered default. It's actually quite difficult sometimes to find. This is something I also find in makeup. Sometimes I really have to check the foundation that I'm buying to make sure it doesn't have SPF in it. I think SPF is good. Yeah, it's good to put on your skin and it's good to have it in your foundation as well. But sometimes, like when you take flash photos and then the SPF in the foundation somehow like reflects that flashlight, I don't know. But I've had some photos that end up looking pretty awful from, they're always taken in the dark, like at night. And but yeah, because of my foundation. So if anyone has any foundation recommendations, please get in touch because I would love a foundation recommendation and one that doesn't include SPF. So I guess that's what I would compare it to. Like when you're buying a foundation and you're not 100% sure, you really have to read the small print to find out whether it has SPF on it. That's kind of like buying Asian brand moisturizers. You really have to check the label and the fine print to make sure it doesn't have any sort of skin whitening ingredients. Another listener who is Canadian Asian got in touch and said, I remember when I went on a tour in China, we visited this pearl factory and one of the products that the sales were promoting was this whitening cream with pearl dust. I definitely had similar experiences in my trip to Korea as well. I think many places in Asia place emphasis on lighter skin as being more attractive. My mum's an, oh god, I don't know how to say this word, ethnician. My mum's an ethnician. And as far as the industry goes, there is definitely a lot of emphasis on trying to brighten and lighten your skin as well. Interested to see your take on this because there's a lot of underlying biases that we adopt from advertisements, dramas, music groups, etc. that we don't even notice. Yeah, and I think that's what it is. It's so like underlying. Like we really need to look into ourselves and actually think, do I have a preference? Do I see people differently? And what are the beauty standards that we place on ourselves and for other people? Brightening, whitening, lightening, that is such like an easy tagline, so no wonder they market it. Her example was that they market it with pearl dust. So she went to a pearl factory and one of the products was whitening cream with pearl dust inside it. So they don't only sell pearls for like jewellery, but also powdered up and put into a cream as if it's supposed to help. I really don't know if that helps, but I mean, there's all sorts of new gimmicks and novelty ingredients that are being included in beauty products these days. Honestly, I can't keep up. Or maybe it's just because pearls are, like, some pearls are white, so if you want white skin, you would put white things on your face. Oh god, please don't take that out of context. Let's just pass over that. In this episode, I'm also speaking to Kanako Nakano, who is a Japanese actress based here in the UK. She's been in the UK for a long time. And I saw her in a play last year called White Pearl. and the storyline of the play, it talks about sort of skin whitening and colorism a lot. It's set in Singapore. Most of the characters, they work at this small startup company, which is in the cosmetic industry. It's called Clear Day. A racist advertisement from the company has leaked, where in the ad, in the video, there's a story of a Chinese woman who has dark skin, and her boyfriend leaves her and goes and dates a lighter skinned woman. These adverts are kind of real. I'm sure if you look up racist adverts online, you'll find some from all different countries, and they often sell these beauty products. I really appreciate Kanako coming on my podcast to share, not just talking about White Pearl, but also talking about her experience as an actress working in theatre and musical theatre, both in Japan and in the UK, as well as other countries. We also talk about other random topics like recycling, and we, of course, like with many of our guests on Yellow Bee Pod, we talk about sense of belonging, cultural identity, and how your ethnic heritage comes into play in your everyday. And another thing before we get into the interview, another one of the fantastic cast members in White Pearl is or was Katie Leung, who used to play Cho Chang in the Harry Potter movies. And there's been a lot going on this week around Harry Potter, and JK Rowling has decided that this is a good time to pipe up again. And she, I mean, we've known for a while now that JK Rowling is a bit, like, she's very anti-trans. So she openly speaks very sort of for women, almost in a trying to be a fair feminist. But then she says some statements which are not inclusive of people in the trans community. And she says this all the time, and she like doubles down on her statements. So we have no doubt about how she feels. And we've known this for a while, but I don't know why she's decided to pipe up now while everyone else in the world is talking about Black Lives Matter. I guess that says a lot. Yeah, honestly, that's such a disappointment. And a lot of people have been talking about how we shouldn't be surprised that she's saying all this discriminatory stuff on her public Twitter because of how some minorities are represented in the Harry Potter books. And I can't say that this is ever something that I really recognised growing up. Like, I, like, read Harry Potter growing up. I was a big fan. It was, like, a big thing. And yeah, I never really clocked any sort of problems with it, but now that I'm older, people are saying like the Patel sisters were just stereotypes, the Irish guy was just a stereotype, there were barely any sort of characters who were people of colour, and where they were, yeah, they just portrayed not just stereotypes, but particularly bad ones as well, and that like the Patel sisters didn't have nice outfits when they went to the ball in the fourth, I don't know. This is all stuff that I've never thought of, but it's good to sort of reflect back now. And JK Rowling is just such a disappointment. But I guess that's what happens when you raise people to like almost God level. I definitely did that. Like growing up, JK Rowling had created such like a colourful, magical, okay, maybe not colourful, but magical, full world that we all wanted to be in, full of history and magic and everything. And when we treat people almost like godlike, I guess they're always going to have a fall from grace. Once we realise that they are actually human beings and have shitty opinions about things. Yeah, it's pretty awful, particularly as there are so many people who found their place, who found solace in the Harry Potter world growing up through the books and the movies, including people who are in the trans community. Anyways, what was my point? So Katie Leung, the actress who played Cho Chang, which apparently in itself is a very problematic name, but I did not know this growing up. I don't know enough about the Chinese language or the name to know that Cho Chang is not an accurate, realistic, real name and that it actually just sounds a bit racist. But that's the facts, guys. We're living and learning. I completely was oblivious to that the entire time that I was reading and watching the movies. So because JK Rowling was trending on Twitter, and so was Cho Chang, Katie Leung joined the conversation and tweeted, "So you want to know my thoughts on Cho Chang? Okay, here goes," and started a thread. And then when you click on that tweet and view the whole thread, she doesn't get into it at all, but she just shares, sort of directing the conversation back to where our attention should be. So she shared lots of links to petitions and fundraising links for organisations who support Black Lives in particular, Black trans women, for homeless Black trans women. And yeah, that's definitely where our attention should be. So we've all been getting lots of links to petitions and resources and book lists and fundraisers, but definitely go check it out. Shouts to, yeah, Katie Leung is cool. My Scottish South Asian friend said that Katie Leung represents Scottish Asians. So that is a representation we need and deserve. Bringing the conversation back around to our conversation with Kanako today, if you have any experiences or stories from colorism or anything that comes up in my conversation with Kanako, definitely get in touch. We would love to hear it. You can get in touch with us at yellowbeepod on Twitter, Instagram, and also on yellowbeepod@gmail.com. Super thrilled to be joined today by Kanako Nakano, a really talented actress who I actually am a big fan of.
Hi, hello, thank you so much for having me.
Hi. We're just laughing at how strange it was that I went to go see a play that Kanako was acting in, and then I bumped into her twice, once at the end of Love Box Festival, a music festival in London, and another time at another theatre where we were both audience members. And I really promise I'm not stalking you, but I just saw you and wanted hi.
I love this coincidence. Like, you know, I mean, it's so amazing that you recognize us. It's like, how did you recognize me in dark? Like, you know, like at nighttime. But it was so amazing. It was so delightful. Like, you know, being told that you really enjoy the show, and yeah. It's so lovely to meet you.
And we will get to talk about White Power, which is the play I first saw your work in. But before that, why don't you introduce yourself and what you do, where you're from?
Okay, sure. My name is Kanako Nakano. I'm from Japan originally. I am Japanese, but who resides in the UK quite a while. Mm-hmm. Actually, I live in the UK longer than Japan. My education, you know, usually in Japan at the end of secondary school. So I had those education in Japan, and I came over here in the middle of high school. Yeah, I left high school in the midway in Japan, and I came here to study in performing arts. Yeah, so my dream was to become musical theater actress. That's why I came here originally. And yeah, this entertainment business, you know, your dream just kind of expands and expands, and I just wanted to do lots of things. I did so many musical theater productions, mainly Miss Saigon, if you ever heard.
Oh, yeah.
my boss, Cameron McIntosh, he's been a great boss for many years for me. I did the production for like totally 6.5 years.
Oh my gosh,
not
amazing.
Continuously. Yeah. Not continuously, but I was lucky one to experience all these like different productions. And the last time I did their production was in Japan. And that was my first time to work in Japan as well. That was the last time I served for that show. And it's been a special part of my life.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I guess.
But have you played Miss Saigon when it was on the West End?
Yes. Recently. It was like 5 years now. Like
I went to go see it back in... It might have been winter 2015 or the start of 2016. It would have been around then.
But yeah, that must be the West End production.
So were you in it then?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I was in that show as well.
Oh, really? Oh my gosh, this is so strange. Yeah, I went to go see it then.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And yeah, it's a really amazing production. Mm. And I do think it can be considered, because it's historical, it's a bit problematic. Mm. Like, the way that they portray Asian women and stuff. But I love it still. And I find myself singing that the Sun and Moon song, even though I only know the first three lines. And even though I can't hit any of the notes, I still find myself singing it.
No, it's beautiful. I was very lucky to just experience the original production, because I didn't get to do the original West End production, but the first UK tour, that was like back in 2001, it was quite a while ago. That was actually my first job, and I did a UK tour with it.
Oh, wow.
And then next tour was like a bit smaller, and I did that tour as well. So, and then West End production, that was quite special. We had 25th anniversary concert, and yeah, all became like a film and stuff. So yeah, it was amazing experience. Yeah.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. So that production will always have a special place in your heart.
Yeah, I guess so. It's been changing a lot, and I don't know when is the next production gonna be. I mean, could be in Japan, could be in Vienna.
How would you compare the musical theatre world in Japan to the UK?
Oh, I only worked there once in Japan, but it's funny because, you know, ethnicity-wise here, there's so many ethnicity here, like, you know, diversity-wise, like, you know, everybody's here, you know, from all over the world. But in Japan, obviously, in the industry, it tend to be everybody's Japanese and sometimes Korean performer, Chinese performer, but then they have to speak in Japanese to perform these shows, which is amazing. But it's just like I felt like there was already community there because it's almost like in one company, everybody does different production, but in the same company. So any show you're going to see it, same people are in it.
Oh, in different roles. Okay.
Yeah. And obviously competition-wise, it's becoming a bit different as well because everybody's Japanese. So I kind of felt when we were rehearsing, the energy from them, like try to impress, it was quite a lot. Whoa.
Yeah.
It was quite an experience in the rehearsal room. And funny thing is, I'm Japanese, but because I wasn't in their community for all this time, I guess I'm still outsider for them. And they treated me as like foreigner. So,
oh, yeah.
It was interesting. But at the same time, maybe it was in a way good. So like, you know, I felt like I could find my place all right. You know, there was not much like pressure or anything. But everybody was extremely nice though. But I just felt like there was a bit of wall that I'm not part of the community. Yeah, that's what I felt.
Yeah.
But production-wise, I kind of feel, I'm sure it's been improving because I don't really know what's going on in other company in Japan. But I always feel more relaxed and I can do my best job in the UK because, of course, there's a pressure sometimes. You know, you want to do good jobs and stuff. But you can be yourself. I think it's easier for me to be in the UK to just express just true, authentic myself. Yeah, that's what I find personally. Yeah.
That's great.
But I'd love to work in Japan more though, but yeah, just like how the system works is very different. So
yeah,
we'll see.
I think the theme of being an outsider or not quite knowing where you fit is something that a lot of people feel. And it's definitely like conversations that I've been having with different individuals, like for this podcast.
Yeah.
And it's just like everyone has different unique experiences, but there is a shared experience there of, yeah, not quite belonging in any community, but having to forge and find your own.
Yeah, it's so interesting though, because one point, because I've been living in London for 23 years now, and when the time, like, you know, oh, okay, I'm living in London longer than Japan. I am Japanese, but when I go back home, people think, like, you know, I'm a bit different. And then here, I'm totally foreigner, but I have a bit of, like, you know, Brit sense of humor. Like, right now, I'm embracing everything. But when I was a bit younger, I was like, where do I actually belong? You know, I had that feeling. Yeah, I definitely had that feeling because even Japanese, I just didn't feel like I fit in their society. Where do I belong? I'm just like in the middle of it.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
No, it's hard, isn't it?
Yeah. But I guess there are so many different ways. You know, there's so many people. Like, you know, you live in UK, you know, since when you were a kid. And obviously I'm Japanese, just came over here as a teenager and then lived here for a long time. But there are so many people, a mixture of people. And I guess it's normal to feel that, you know, where do I belong? I think anybody has those kind of feeling.
Yeah. No, it is a hard one, especially now that we live in such a like interconnected world. It's very common for people to move to somewhere where they're not from or where they might look different to the other people around them. And then as the generations go past, we will have more people who have been residing in different countries for maybe more than one generation.
Yeah.
And actually, we need to like progress. Like our mindset of what an English person looks like or what a Japanese person looks like will change over, like, hopefully keeping up with the generations.
It's not just cover of the book, isn't it? It's just like a people tend to judge from like an outside when there's so much going on inside. You know, some people like mixture of everywhere, lots of culture inside. And yeah, to be more open-minded about it, I think it's very important to have that mindset, isn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah,
I want to go on and talk about White Pearl.
Yeah, sure.
Obviously, you know a lot more about the play than I do, but I'll start off by doing an introduction of what I know about the play.
Yeah, sure.
And then you can like fill in some of the blanks and share some of your experiences.
Okay.
So as I mentioned before, I saw Kanako in a play which was held in London at the Royal Court Theatre. The play was called White Pearl, and I actually liked it so much I went to go see it twice. I'm like a really big fan. which is great, really though. Fantastic.
Thanks for supporting us.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I brought a friend along with me the next time as well. And I don't know what exactly it is that I really liked about it, but a big part of it is because it was a story and a voice that I hadn't seen before, definitely not in the UK. And I think the Royal Court Theatre is quite well known for giving a platform for artists and voices which haven't been heard before, which I'm a big supporter of.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. That space is so amazing. Last year, this time, it was like very liberating feeling that we rehearsed in next door. They have a studio next door to the theatre, and we had that space to rehearse. And it was just so nice to have six Asian women from like in different decent, like I'm from Japan, like, you know, other people like from, okay, Priya, she's supposed to be Singaporean, but then Indian heritage, and then another Chinese Singaporean and Korean, Japanese, myself, and Chinese and Thai American. She's like supposed to be like, you know, from California or something. And, so we all were supposed to be from different places, because in UK, I used to do also Pan-Asian show, you know, like, but you kind of played a one Asian character.
It's just like a generic Oriental.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. But because if you don't really, I don't know how much interest they have for, you know, British people, but I think for us, we are so different, you know, even like next door to the country, Korea, China, Japanese, they're so different. And it was so nice to show that difference, you know, individuality. And we, in the real life as well, we were so different, all of us.
So something which I also really liked about the play, it was how when there starts to become some conflict between the different characters, there was they sort of touched on sort of some of the historical differences between East Asian countries, and the difference, like they treated people differently, whether they were like English, British educated or like from the homeland. And you can see that even though all of these women are Asian, they all have very different stories and actually things that they like stereotypes against each other as well.
True. That's so true.
So I thought that is interesting and it reflects reality, but it's great to see that you are all getting along. It's not like that in the
but then in the reality we all were getting along really well. Everybody had different strengths and they all supported each other, and it was so liberating and empowering, and the connection we made was it was something so special, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah That's so fantastic, and that's definitely something that I noticed. So the cast is made up of seven performers, almost all Asian women, so it represented lots of different Asian countries, but it wasn't a generic sort of Oriental this is an East story.
No it's not that. Even myself, I guess this was actually maybe first time for me to play Japanese role.
Oh, really? Like
proper, authentic Japanese role. I mean, on TV, you know, you do Japanese characters, but it's sometimes like, you know, it could be quite stereotypic. But then this one was, she can be a bit stereotypic, but then it's just the character choice. I just felt like, and this is maybe my first time to play proper Japanese person, like who has Japanese name. You know, Japanese, character.
And not just be a caricature of what some other people might think Japanese people would be like.
I mean, my character is quite funny. She she was a nice character as well. She didn't really say something that horrible. She just kind of bit. Sometimes going to her own world, but I was quite lucky to have that role.
So I want to share a little bit about what the play was about. So
yeah, sure, of course.
The play was set in Singapore, and it's about a startup company called Clear Day, which is a cosmetic company. And the story of the play talks about how the company was faced with a lot of controversy after a racist advertisement for one of their products went viral online. And that's sort of how the play starts. You can see like the number of views on the video is going up, and it's very like racist advertisement which promotes a skin whitening cream. So this is like a skin whitening cream, like a face cream which was supposedly makes your skin lighter, brighter, whiter. And I mean, this is a fictional story, but I've definitely seen some real life advertisements which are very anti-dark skin, anti-black, which have come from like the continent of Asia in general. And these products definitely exist as well.
Yeah, it's so like surprising. Like, you know, when we were rehearsing, we shared like in some videos, like on YouTube, like, wow, I just can't believe these kind of things exist. It's just like, wow, really? People does this like in reality? And yeah, it was so interesting. Like, it really exists. And I kind of knew, you know, some those kind of bleaching agents, you know, all this whitening cream that exists in some country. There could be lots of them, maybe. We just don't really know it, isn't it? Like, until you really find out about it. But yeah, it's quite shocking. Some of the adverts are like, oh, whoa. I don't know if you've seen any of them. Yeah,
it definitely wouldn't run here in the UK, or I would hope not.
Oh, no. Oh, no, definitely no. That would be that would go viral for sure.
And it shouldn't really exist at all. I think skin whitening products or wanting to have a fairer skin tone is not something which is exclusive for Singapore. It's not something which is exclusive in even East and Southeast Asia, but actually across the Asian continent and also in Africa as well. There's a lot of like different skin whitening creams. And I think in South Asia, a very common one is a Fair and Lovely brand.
Okay. Oh, I didn't really know common. That. Right.
Yeah, so it's a very, very real product. I only know this because there's a lot of South Asian people in the UK. Many of my friends are from South Asian descent. And yeah, it's almost like a joke, but not a joke. For example, so one of my friends went for a facial. She thought it was just a facial. But actually, they also did a procedure which is supposed to lighten your skin tone as part of it. They just assumed that that's what she wanted as well.
Wow.
Which is...
What did they do, though, to...
Really strange.
Is it... Some kind of...
I don't know, maybe some interesting chemicals, I don't know.
Gosh. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really strange.
Yeah, it's so common. I mean, in Japan as well, when was it? Oh, I mean, certain era, obviously, so certain generation, there was like, you know, tanned skin was quite popular. That's like in 90s, like, you know, early 2000, something like that. Yeah. We had that kind of like a trend as well. It's so funny, all this like a trend and fashions, you know, it keeps changing. But then nowadays, because to have white, it's always like, you know, something you don't have, you want, you long for something, like, you know, it's just grass is always greener and just,
And people with straight hair want curly hair, people with curly hair want straight hair.
Yeah.
You're never actually satisfied with what you have.
Fair skin as well, like, you know, some beautiful English rose, you know, like they have lovely pale skin, but they wanted to tan themselves a lot and just like, why do you do that? It's just like, it's funny, like, you know, what you want, they want something different. But everybody in Japan, they want to be white, like pale right now. It's just like in Korea as well, I guess. Because pale skin is beautiful. There's no like, you know, some marks and all this like imperfection.
Yeah, like no freckles, like pale, no blemishes.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, like a really pale, clear skin that you can see through almost, like transparent.
And it's almost like a sign of youth, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I guess so. It just like looks like, oh, you look so young and you look pretty. Looks just so beautiful. But it's so funny how people see as a beauty these things, because I kind of thought, like, when do we become actually those like a pale skin and, you know, westernized features so beautiful? You know, when do we actually learn about it? Like, when do we actually social conditioned, you know, about it? You know?
Yeah.
I was saying the questioning, like, because all these like things I recently questioned, like, when do we get social conditioned these things? Like, there's so many things. Yeah.
It starts at a really young age.
Yeah,
definitely.
It must be. Yeah. But it's like in more than like, you know, our generation, like, in a long time ago, when this image came out and then people think this is a beautiful image. It's just so interesting, like, you know, when did it actually start?
I should clarify that when you say that people might want to be white, that doesn't necessarily mean they want to be Caucasian, but it means that they want to have a skin tone that's so fair it's white.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, pale skin tone. But I feel like lots of Japanese people, especially in the theater industry as well, lots of like women, like middle-aged women, like fan of like in a theater audience. And then they always love a westernized show, something like in a big dress, Western look, you know, like a pale, obviously this makeup, beautiful wig. They always like fantasize something about it, Western country. I don't know, yeah. Like they see it as a beauty and they're always interested in much more in a Western musical rather than like Asian musical, like Asian story. It's so interesting how they see it, like a Western look. Like big eyes, like a small nose, like, you know, small face and pale skin. That's like that's what they see as a beauty.
Yeah.
That's quite a stereotypic idea, I guess. But yeah, that's how I grew up.
Yeah, I definitely know what you mean. Mm. Like if you sort of look at the movies which are set in like the Victorian times or Little Women, the movie that came out recently, sort of that's very much like a delicate English rose look.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, there's also contrasting sort of beauty standards. And this is something that I was confused by when I was growing up. So I grew up in the UK in Essex of all places, where we love a little bit of fake tan.
Oh my God.
So there's definitely a stereotype.
You're Essex girl.
Oh, please don't say that. I don't think I fulfill all of the stereotypes, but I definitely grew up wanting to be more tan. Like being tan was definitely a sign that you were, well, I don't know if it was connected to the, maybe you, looks like you travel a lot, you're very like, I don't know,
I guess it looks more healthier, isn't it? Like tan skin looks like healthier, yeah, rather than being
kind of
pale,
yeah. Golden glow, yeah. And sometimes you gotta fake it to make it. And you know, sometimes it can go wrong and turn a bit orange. So yeah, that was like a really interesting thing that I had when I was growing up, particularly in Essex, but I think that's across the UK and in other countries.
Yeah, I guess it's across the UK. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But yeah, on the contrary, I am still Asian, I'm Chinese. And when I would go back to visit my mum's side of the family in Malaysia, they would always say, like, oh, why are you obsessed with being in the sun? Don't walk in the sun, hold this umbrella, shield yourself, don't tan your face.
Yeah.
And that was a completely different contrast for me.
It's the same story in Japan as well. My mom's always like, you know, wear long sleeves, like even so, like scorching hot, like in summer in Japan is crazy, like humid and everything. It's like, wear long sleeves, just cover up, like, you know, put hats on and everything. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
it's same story in Asia, I guess. Yeah.
And there's also stereotypes of like Asian women, I think particularly Korean women, who wear like long gloves to make sure that they don't tan their hands and arms, especially when they're driving, and then also like a visor that will block out the UV rays to protect their face, sort of like a big, I don't know how you describe it, like a golf visor. I don't know how to describe it.
You don't have it here in the UK? You don't.
My mum actually has one. My mum's always keen to protect her skin, and she's always telling me like, oh, if you sit out in the sun like that, you need to cover your face because you're going to end up looking old and wrinkly and having sunspots and blemishes and freckles on your face. Well, freckles, I think, can be seen in a positive way, but I mean, it makes sense. You should protect your skin, you know, for health reasons.
I guess. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It was two completely opposite ends of the spectrum. They were the two influences that I had growing up.
It's kind
up.
Of extreme, isn't it? Both way. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And it is something that exists in different countries. There's a line in the play which really stuck with me because I'd never heard anything like that before, talking about how skin whitening products might be promoted or popular in different countries. And it says, South Asians got the whole caste thing. Thai women want to look like Korean women, and Korean women want to look like dolls. Which is such a funny line on the play. And that really stuck with me because I was like, wow, like no one is satisfied with what they look like. We are always trying to be something else, even if that's wanting to look like a doll.
Yeah, it's so true though. Everybody why is that? It's just so funny. Like everybody wants to become somebody else or like something else, and just that you want to keep on changing. I don't know, something about it. But Korean people, they look like a doll anyway.
Oh yeah, I feel like Korean skincare is world famous and something that I could probably benefit a lot from. I would love to be able to be that person who has like a 10-step skincare routine morning and night.
There are so many products though, like they're quite popular in Japan as well. And I mean, in Japan as well, you go out and go shopping, there are so many chemists with lots of like makeup products, and there are too many. And every season they change. So it's just like, gosh, I can't really catch up on it.
Yeah, it's just like the new level of consumerism where there's always going to be something else that they can sell us.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad because ultimately they advertise these things to us as you talk about it in White Pearl as well, where you say like whitening cream is not a want, it's a need. Like women need it because we tell women not to be happy with how they look, which I can definitely relate to because sometimes I watch like TV adverts and then I'm like, oh, they're trying to sell me a product for a problem that I didn't even know that I had with my appearance. Yeah. And it's a bit silly. Well, something that came up recently, it came up as an ad online. I hate these like targeted ads. It was a mask, like a face mask, but not for your face. It was for like your chest area.
Oh.
So it was basically saying that to stop your chest area from looking like wrinkly, or maybe like to make it look more smooth and youthful, it had like a mask that you'd put on your chest.
And I was saggy.
I know. I was honestly like, I didn't even know that this was a part of my body that I need to be conscious of. But now I know about it, and now I want to buy this product. But I didn't buy it. I resisted. But that's basically what it's like for any sort of beauty procedure or beauty product.
Yeah,
it's hard work. It's crazy.
It's just never ending. Everywhere, like any part of your body, and you know, like when you do like face like massaging, and like, you know, it goes to your head and everywhere's skin, so like you have to take care of everywhere.
But I do admire the people who can follow a very strict skincare routine, Korean or otherwise. I think it's amazing, and it just shows that, you know, they're looking after themselves, they care about their appearance. Well, I don't know, maybe that's not a good thing, I don't know.
But some people are so dedicated, and I, you know, for my profession as well, I need to take care of myself. You know, I do love taking care of myself, but then I'm not going that extreme. Just like myself, like I have been lucky, like, you know, my mom loves these like organic skincare since when I was younger. So I was kind of like, not dummy, but you know, she just like send me stuff like, can you try this? Can you try that? So I was quite lucky to have all these amazing products, but it can go extreme. And it's nice to take care of yourself, but it's just like, if you go too extreme, you kind of lose your life, isn't it? A bit.
just become obsessed.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. It's never become obsessed, but something like in a good balance to just, yeah, still healthy.
Yeah.
I still enjoy myself, but still there are other things I can do. Not just the skincare all the time, because you can do that all day. That's crazy.
I know. My mum also is really into her skincare. Maybe it's an Asian lady thing.
It's
maybe
an Asian lady like that in thing. The future. Yeah.
No, my mum's always giving me products, and sometimes I don't even know what it is or what it's for. And sometimes if it's not written in English, I'm like, is this cleanser? Am I supposed to use this with water? Do I leave it on? Do I wash it off? What do I apply this with? And, you know, it might be written in like Korean or Japanese or Chinese, which I can't read. And sometimes I have to like really look into it because, okay, sometimes it will say like this product has SPF in it, but then it might also have like a skin whitening function, like as part of the product, but sometimes it doesn't even say that, and I wouldn't necessarily know. I mean, sometimes I don't know whether it would work, but you know, I think that's something to be wary of. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, do I want to put this on my face? I don't really want to be paler. I don't want to risk anything. I don't want to end up with like patchy skin if I haven't applied it properly.
Some allergic reaction or it's scary sometimes when they don't describe much about what's the ingredient. That's quite scary, isn't it? Like, what am I putting on my face? But there are so many that kind of products exists, and I don't know, be careful about like what they have and stuff. I don't think you can use anything. Just impossible to just have like just organic, nothing bad.
Yeah, that's true. But just because something is organic, I don't know, that's just sort of like the way it's grown, right? There's certain things that they have to prove. But if something can be organic but then can still be bad for you, or it can be organic but still be tested on animals or be bad for the planet, So sometimes it's all down to the marketing, you know, like there's now it's consumers are switched on to things being good for you and good for the planet. So a lot of companies are marketing towards that. And I'm thinking just because something comes in a cardboard box rather than a plastic box, does that actually mean it's better? I don't know. You really too much
it's still cardboard box, isn't it? Like to recycle. Yeah, so true. The packaging though, packaging is crazy. Anything, I think, you know, just like some stuff like you can recycle. And I don't know, there's so many things you can recycle. Like, you know, is it in a good balance? Like recycling so many things, like are they catching up with these recycling stuff?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And also like recycling still requires energy. So it's much better never bought the product at all. So it never has to be created. So because all the energy and the resources required to create a t-shirt or a cardboard box, even if it is recycled or recyclable, I mean, I don't know, it's finding that balance. Last night I was watching on Netflix, I was watching a stand-up special by Ronnie Cheng, who's a Malaysian Australian now residing in America comedian. And he says that, oh, he came to America and this place is all about abundance and people want things instantly. They want the service instantly. We don't want Amazon delivery. We want Amazon Prime, Amazon right now. And things come in a box, in a bigger box. And this is how I want my stuff delivered. And it's so true. So true. Oh, this is the world now.
Amazon is occasionally, like, when they deliver stuff, like, it's crazy. Even such a small product, like, why is there so many papers inside? Like, you can roll it and, like, I can use this for, like, maybe wrapping some prezi or, like, another parcel or something.
Yeah, like, maybe you order something very small, like some earrings, and it'll come in a box surrounded by plastic bags filled with air in a bigger box.
Protection. But I always kind of question, like, maybe I shouldn't buy things, you know, because when you buy some stuff, there's always, like, even recyclable things, there's so many of them. I mean, our recycle bin in the flat, like, it's always full because there's so many things always you full, can recycle, but then it's not catching up with the, you know, amount.
I know. Yeah. I don't actually know what happens with all this stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. One of my guilty pleasures is fast fashion. Mm. So, you know, all these online websites, they just create stuff so much. I'm constantly getting bombarded with emails about deals and I'm just tempted all the time. And then someone pointed out that if you sort of buy something, say you buy something in two sizes because you want to try each size and you return one. For them, it costs them more to have someone sort of open your package, receive it, check it, repackage it, and make it ready to resell. Mm. And actually, it's cheaper for the company just to send that very cheaply made item to the landfill.
Right.
And that really opened up my eyes because I was thinking, oh, damn. So I thought I was, you know, just wasting the energy of the delivery truck and some plastic packaging, but I'm also wasting all the energy that was put in to create that that dress that I decided not to keep.
Yeah.
And it won't even end up being resold or worn, which really opened my eyes to how much waste there is.
Oh gosh, I can't imagine how much waste with this fashion stuff. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
Still a guilty pleasure though.
I know. I totally understand. Like when I was younger, just like every time I went back to Japan, like, you know, every year, like as maybe winter holiday or something, like, you know, during college time, every time when I went to Japan, I always bought new makeup, like new lipstick, like new like eyeshadow or something, and new trainers and a new coat and like a new bag. Like, it's just like crazy. Like, and that's what I used to do. I'm such a spoiled brat. Just like, you know, my parents bought me some stuff. And but when you kind of think, I didn't need that. I mean, I did enjoy it, but there are so many things, even in my wardrobe, I tried to get rid of lots of things, but I can't get rid of everything. But then there are so many things. It's just like, it's crazy. We actually don't need this much stuff, but it's so much fun, isn't it, when you can enjoy these like different kind of clothes
and abundance.
Find out. Yeah, it is abundance. It's so funny. It's so true, the abundance.
There's also a trend for like a minimalistic lifestyle, so maybe one day I'll do that.
Yeah. No, that's very Japanese though, you know. Marie Kondo and all the,
does it spark joy?
There's so many people who, it's funny, I mean, they're still consume stuff, but then I remember, well, you know, Muji,
yeah,
the company. The shop in Japan, they have like a Muji life. It's almost like you can live in the Muji home. Like, you know, you can decorate your home like a Muji. It's quite minimalistic, but then when you think of it, there's so many products. So I don't know. It looks minimalistic, but then at the same time, there's so many products, but they all just use the Muji stuff. So it's funny. It's like, I don't know. I just get confused sometimes. These things, just like, maybe minimal. Yeah, I don't know about that. Still.
Yeah, I think it's easy to get confused. And even with Marie Kondo, so when she came out, she was all about, you know, throw away things that don't spark joy. And you realize how little stuff actually sparks you joy. And then you don't have half as much stuff as you did originally. But then she also came out and started selling things
that would help
you to build a life that sparks joy. So she's selling things like storage containers and definitely things you don't need. But hey, that's the world we live in now, right? It's profit driven.
It's so crazy. But if you don't buy anything, obviously, you know, economy, it's just this spinning, like, you know, circle of this system. It's just like, you know, make a good balance of it. There are so many points you kind of question, like, I'm not quite sure if I'm doing the right thing. Like, it's just like, it doesn't actually make sense.
It's true. No, it's difficult to really know. But hey, the point is that no one's perfect and we're all going to be consuming stuff at the end of the day just by being alive. And, you know, we all require something, some food at least. If we all like make a small cut, that'll have a big impact overall for the planet.
That's true. But you still want to enjoy your life as well, isn't it? But just like not to become too selfish about it, but, you know, still have a bit of a caring towards where we live, you know, this planet. So it's all about balance, I guess.
It is all about balance. So we're actually recording this on the date, well, exactly 1 year ago, the Play White Pearl opened. And that totally wasn't deliberate.
Such a coincidence. You know, me and you, everything's about coincidence, isn't it? Like some kind of
really
coincidence. Yeah, but I love this. I love this. Like...
And you're still in touch with some of the other cast members and who I bumped into the 2 times that I bumped into you before we spoke today, which is really like quite wholesome.
Oh no, they're so amazing. We shared so much. Okay, in the Royal Court when we were doing the play, I was in the dressing room with Momo and Kae, who were in the show, and we were in this dressing room on the second floor, just right next to the wardrobe department, and we had a nice balcony, and it was like a lovely summery, you know, nice weather as well. And we used to hang out in the balcony after the show, or like, you know, just even before the show as well. Going to work was always exciting, just like going there. Okay, sometimes you start by yourself, but then you hear some like heels click, 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 somebody's coming. And then it's like, oh, like people join in. And then we just chat, anything casual, but everything was so open. We never held back anything. It's just kind of like, we shared everything. Talked about makeup, you know, all the fashion and stuff. Because everybody's so fashionable. Like they're all beautiful individually. And everybody's so different as well, which is so amazing. Yeah, talked about life and about the play or like, industry, men, you know, all this relationships. And we had such a great time. And it's so nice to have this kind of platform to just talk about your story, because, you know, just be heard, like in our voices. Sometimes I think Asian people are quite shy to, like, you know, just open up and talk about it with everybody. And I mean, people are doing it, but still, we're kind of like reserved in a way, and we don't actually push our voice so much. Even like we have so much saying, you know, like we've been just too over polite sometimes. And I kind of realized, did you see Michelle Obama's like Netflix series?
Her Netflix special called Becoming.
She was even saying that, but you know, everybody has got individual story. It's so funny, before starting the rehearsal as well, when we introduce each other in a circle of like a cast and all the stuff. And then, you know, some people say like, oh, my story is not that interesting. You know, I'm like, you know, I'm from here. No, it's so interesting. Like you think it's not interesting because you're so familiar with it. But for other people to get to know like those little things, it's so, you know, fascinating. And it's actually quite interesting. There's so many interesting actually coming out. And it's so nice to just share it with anybody. I plan to be more open about myself, and I just to listen to so many other voices, and also not to be scared of, like, you know, what I want to say, or like what I feel, what I think. I want to just keep on sharing. So I feel, I feel really grateful to have this platform today to, like, you know, talk to you, especially we actually don't know each other that much. We only like bumped into each other for a few times, but it's so lovely to get to know each other and to keep on sharing, to make this like a nice community. I think it's so wonderful to start connecting to everybody.
That is why that I started the podcast.
Just to keep on discussing.
For community, collaboration, all the C's.
Yeah, no, it's a great, you know, I was like listening to your first podcast and second one as well. It was so different because first one was with your sister, right? Yeah, it's so cute.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
No, but I love it. Like, you know, it's such a casual chat. And then, you know, you guys know what it used to be like. You can visualize things, but it's just so nice to share those things. It's like truth, isn't it? Like, it's kind of true feeling. It's something like, you know, you really felt like a joy or like sad or annoying or whatever. It's nothing like, you know, pretentious about it. It's the authentic voice. And it's so nice to hear that.
I think it really is down to the authenticity. And you're right, everyone does have a story to share, even if they don't think they do. And something that I've learned from sort of my past experience in working on this podcast and interviewing is really learning how to encourage people and to get them to share things that they might not think are interesting at all. And you're right, it is so valuable. I also see a trend where I think Asian people are, well, there are lots of people out there getting their voices heard, which is amazing, but I think there is a cultural norm to maybe keep to yourselves or to assimilate or to just keep your head down, not draw too much focus to yourself. I'm not sure exactly what it is, if it is a cultural thing or if it's just I don't know.
We don't like confrontation sometimes. Maybe just want to, I'm sure individually, you know, from each country, Japanese people, they don't really like confrontation. I think they just want to make things peaceful. Even you can tell it's really not peaceful at all, but you kind of still pretend everything's fine. But, you know, even backstabbing each other, just, I shouldn't say too much of that, but still, like, you know, something not truthful about it. But people on the surface, they want to make it looks like everything's fine. Everything's perfect. Everything's neat. Everything's good. You can clearly tell from the air. If you're aware of these things, you can clearly tell, like, you know, in the air, it's like there's something wrong. There's something not working here.
And I think I definitely fit into that group as well of being very conflict averse and really keen to smooth things over. Even if there is a reason to have a disagreement or a debate about something, I'm the person who's always like, don't fight, smooth it over. Don't want to have any conflict at all.
And then I think it's a cultural thing as well, and how we grew up and how we've been. I'm sure it's culturally different, but especially in Asia, like how we grew up, just try to be a perfect human, you know, like good at anything, good education, all this, like if you're like, you're not, how can I say, you're just so like beautiful, like, and not so much of words, like, like be quiet, like, and this image that they create that should be, people in Asia should be like that, like it's funny, there's an image that we grew up with, but sometimes it's so like unnecessary, some stuff, you know, you can be just yourself. You know, I have been learning quite a lot about it because I grew up in Japan mostly, and this social condition side, I'm just trying to figure out, like, because of that, self-worth is sometimes lower. I notice, like, you know, I can kind of like, you know, put myself down, like just trying to make peace, or like just not to be outspoken, or like not to be pushy, but it's just like, just to be polite, I kind of downgrade myself. I used to be like that. But then you don't have to be, you want to take care of yourself and you should be proud of what your opinion is or like where you come from.
Yeah, we kind of have to train our brains to do it a different way. I think that's something that's quite common with women of all ethnicities, actually, to sort of speak poorly of ourselves, make other people feel more comfortable. I don't know why we do it. I think it is ingrained in us as like a social norm, but we can sort of train our minds to think a different way. It's hard though to stand up and be like, look at me, listen to my story. But you're right, we all have something to share, and we need to listen to people who are different to us.
It's so funny because last year I had a great opportunity to teach some Japanese kids. I don't usually teach people, but I taught some kids, some musical theater dancing. It's only like a one day thing. Yeah, but I was so nervous because I just never had those kind of opportunity and taught in Japanese as well. That was my first experience. But it was so nice. Like, and they were all teenager who's like 16, 17. That's the age actually I came over to UK. And you know, like their energy, it's so amazing. And then they were listening to me, like in my experience, whatever, you know, my casual things, like what my life is like. And so even like, you know, just normal thing for me or like something so casual. But when I shared about myself, they were so delighted. And I've just never had that experience before. It's like, wow, whatever, you know, I have been doing is actually can move some people. And if I can move people in a good way, I would love to do that more. I don't know, whatever I say, like, it's not, everything's not moving everybody, but it's still like, you know, I just want to be open heart about it. Yeah, if I can be any help for anyone, that'd be fantastic. Just talking about yourself, right? It's like, yeah, it's such a great thing. Yeah, just talking about your story, because these things, I think it's just, you just get a bit shy about it sometimes, but you don't actually need to be shy about it. And just sharing yourself and just get to know people is simple as that, I guess.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think those young people would have definitely benefited from seeing you, hearing your story. And I'm sure they saw you as a role model figure as well.
I mean, I don't know about that.
I'm sure they took some inspiration from your journey and your story.
But it's all comedy though for me. I think any journey. all my career, my career, there's so many highlights. You know, when you're asking me about, like, what's the highlights of your career? It's like, every moment is a highlight for me. Any jobs I've done, even some lots of questionable jobs, or but any jobs I've done, even not just to do with acting, you know, between jobs as well, whatever I've done, I served as myself. And then I learned so much from it. And because of those experiences, I exist right now. So I embrace all the experience. And yeah, I mean, all the theater career, it's all amazing ones as well. I'm so lucky to be part of all those amazing productions.
Yeah, it certainly seems like an exciting and interesting field, and not one that I know anything about at all.
It's funny because you really don't have to divide these things. Yeah. The funny thing is, like, lots of people tend to divide a lot of things. Like, even, I mean, it's not really happening anymore, but before, people used to call me like, you know, oh, you're the dancer, right? Like, yes, I dance, but I still sing and I actually act as well. You know, you don't have to divide it. But then even in the industry as well, if you do so many musical theater, it's people think that it's like, oh, it's a transitioning, like, you know, to become actor. It's like, why can't I be both? I can do both. Just like, yeah, it's funny, like people tend to divide things because you can mix things. You can be good at math and you can just be good at art and mix together and create something together. You know, that would be a fantastic thing. So unlimited and...
Yeah. Mm. And well, I think it's very common now for people to have like multi-hyphenated, if that's the word, careers. I'm surprised you say that about musical theatre because from my eyes, musical theatre, you have to be a great singer, dancer and actor. It's not optional.
Yeah, true. But it's funny, people think, people want to divide it. I don't know why. Maybe they don't do that anymore, but they used to do it before. And it was very difficult to be seen for like, just for like a straight acting. Can be anybody, right?
Oh, yeah. So,
yeah. But that's why, like, when people ask, like, what do you actually do? Like, you know, oh, I'm an actor. But then actor, what does it mean, actor? It's just a person who acts, but I actually do a different thing as well. So it's like, how can I call myself actor, performer, artist? It was like, oh gosh, it becomes like a big wide range. But yeah, so I do myself. But yeah, it's very difficult not to label, you know. That's how we kind of like socially grew up with, so we kind of have to name like what we do, show like what we are, but we don't need to do that, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to end, actually. So being your true authentic self, even though it is your profession to act, but yeah, finding your own platform, your own voice. And I think part of that, I really hope that you get some roles which are also authentic, well-rounded Japanese characters who are not stereotypes or not a generic Oriental Pan-Asian.
Oh, gosh. I'm sure it's going to happen.
So where can the listeners find you online?
Oh, okay. So I'm actually not that great on social media at the moment because I think I tend to check on Instagram more than other things. I have got Twitter account, but then I haven't been on Twitter for a long time. So Instagram could be the best place maybe for now. That's my name. Yeah.
Okay, I'll include a link in the show notes below.
Thank you so much.
And I really wish I could end this by telling people to go see White Power when it's not playing anymore.
Oh, it's so amazing. Oh, no, it's great. It was very provocative as well, you know, the show itself. And it was such a liberating experience on that stage. Six fierce, powerful women.
I guess that's the reason I loved it so much. More makes sense now.
Yeah, but that's so true. On that stage, though, I think it was the first time six different Asian women to be on the stage.
It's a very unique story.
So, yeah, such a privilege.
Kanako, I've had so much fun today. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on our podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Bye. I really, really hope you enjoyed that episode, and a massive thank you again to Kanako Nakano for joining me for a really fun conversation about all sorts of different topics that we didn't expect. I had a fab time chatting with her. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already so you don't miss the next episode, and tune in to Yellow Bee Pod again soon. It's been your girl Natalie, and I'll speak to you soon. Bye!